V6s, couldn't get rid of
the
four cylinders.
Yeah, we have short memories here.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
No, this is the future. It's all in battery technology, though, again.
Battery technology.
Give me a battery that give me 100-mile range, and I'll give you a good car to put around it.
Exactly. But that's coming forward, don't you think?
Very.
Battery technology is big time.
Oh, yeah, lithium.
Yeah.
I put it on all my bikes. Cost me $1 million on fires. Lithium, I knew was hot, but you had no control over it.
Exactly.
Doc Frank here, he says, yeah, but now they have lithium phosphate run by little computers and it keeps the heat down. Well, I didn't know the heat would start fires. We burned down a house one time in a garage.
Well, Sony's finding that out with their batteries and their personal computers. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, you can't upsize lithium.
Yeah.
It just keeps getting hotter and hotter.
Yeah.
More together.
Right.
Okay, Dick. Good to see you.
Thank you.
We're here at the Alternative Car and Transportation Expo at the Santa Monica Airport. I'm joined by Dick Messer on PodTech.net. For The Next Gear, I'm Matt Kelly. Dick, thanks for being on the podcast.
Well, thanks for being here. It's really resonating with the public, isn't it? There's a good crowd here already, and the show just opened.
And we even had a mini celebrity or a major celebrity here with Mr. Iacocca.
The Iacocca is very interested in alternative power. He's very, very interesting man, and if your people have not read his books, I recommend you get the two Lee Iacocca books about America and all that. But he's a real forward thinker, and you can get that out of his books. But he's a gentleman in his 80s, and he's still very interested in alternative power. He had a company for a while that did electric bicycles, and the problem with the situation was it wasn't selling them. It was getting the right battery for the bicycle that wouldn't burn up in the process of riding the bicycle. It was the lithium batteries, and it's a problem, and it's still a problem. These people are getting the electric car technology are finding, to start working with the batteries, that there is a problem with the battery technology. And I think that's what's holding everybody up right now is the fact is that there are electric vehicles, but it's range, it's speed, it's charging time, it's all these things that hold it back. And the first person to come up with a battery that'll go 200 miles in a car you can drive an average speed of 65 miles an hour will have the market. But right now, battery technology, the electric motor, the style of the vehicle and all that is not as important as the fact that the battery technology is very important. The problem you've got is manyfold. First of all, you have to have the range for the battery. You got charging time. Once the battery goes down, the reason hybrids are so popular now is when the battery goes down, you still have your gasoline motor to get you along. And I think the thing coming up, which Toyota is coming out with in 2008, is the plug-in hybrid. In other words, you can drive your car about 60 or 70 miles just on the electric, on the battery and electrical system, and then you can go to the motor. I have a home in Riverside, and driving from Los Angeles to Riverside is about 70 miles. Doesn't quite make it with an electric car. Couldn't make it with the EV1, couldn't make it with the current Prius on battery, but if you have the gasoline motor, you can do it. Now, if Toyota comes out with this technology, with a plug-in hybrid that'll go about 80 miles, I'm in great shape. I get to my house in Riverside, I plug it in, and a couple, 4 or 5 hours, I can get in and drive back to LA if I have to. But that's the big thing now, is range of the battery, life of the battery. And the problem you've got with electric power, of course, is once you're out of charge, you're out of charge, and you have to wait to recharge. At the turn of the century, 1900, electricity, steam, and gasoline were equally used as modes of power for cars, and people actually preferred electric cars.
Edison was behind the electric vehicle.
All the way, and you can go to Greenfield Village in Dearborn, Michigan, and see his what he was doing there to develop the electric vehicle. And the reason people liked it, first of all, you didn't have to crank it up. That was one thing. Steam was dangerous because it could blow up on you. Electricity was clean. The women loved it. They could get in the vehicle. Usually the vehicles, I don't know why electric cars had such high roofs, but most of them had very high roofs, so they could have their hat on, which is very stylish in 1900, and you could get in the car and not worry about getting your hat knocked off, and you'd just press on the accelerator and off you went. You had an accelerator and brake, and usually tiller steering, but you had your electric car. But then again, in those days, you had about a 15, 20 mile range, but in those days, that was plenty. I mean, the cities were smaller, and you could get from point A to point B pretty easily.
Now, you're director of the Peterson Automotive Museum, and we can actually go there to take a look at this EV1. Is that correct?
That's correct. We just took out an alternative power exhibit, not alternative fuel, alternative power exhibit. So we're talking about hydrogen power, we're talking about biodiesel, we're talking about coal-powered cars going back into the 30s. And we just took that out, and we have rearranged some exhibits to be, it's going to be a semi-permanent exhibit. We're coming back to the Peterson in the end of February, 1st of March, we'll have a semi-permanent exhibit on alternative power, not alternative fuel, alternative power. So, yeah, that's what's going on at the Peterson. It's a museum, but we like to be on the cutting edge. The technology is very important. And, of course, what happens today is history by tomorrow, isn't it? So it's very important that we get this down and we record it. EV1 is a car we got gifted to us from General Motors. As you know, they crushed them all. The movie Who Killed the Electric Car has all about the history of the EV1. The movie isn't quite factual or fair to General Motors, I don't think, in this particular film. But it's a film worth seeing, and you see about the EV1. But there were certain museums that got the EV1 before they crushed them all. This particular one we have in our museum actually was driven from Detroit to Los Angeles. The owner of this car, who's from Los Angeles, picked it up in Detroit and drove it out to Los Angeles. It took him 2.5 weeks to do it because the car had a range of about 60 miles at cruising speed, and then you have to stop and plug it in and charge it for 8 hours. So it took him 2.5 weeks to get from Detroit to LA, but he didn't pollute the atmosphere.
Great story.
But this is the other issue with the battery. At some point, that battery is going to go bad with current technology, and then you have to dispose of it. And it is a problem. It's a toxic chemical, and you have to go through the correct procedures to dispose of the battery. So that's another issue. The more electric cars come on, the longer electric vehicles come on, the more you've got an issue with disposing of the battery.
Are we going to see at the Peterson Automotive Museum some electric cars in the future that perhaps are here, or alternative fuel vehicles that are here down the road, or even some alternative fuel vehicles of the past?
We are willing to display anything that we think is worthy of the technology that allows it to be displayed at the Peterson. We have applied to General Motors for one of the 100 Equinoxes they're going to put out next year, which is a hydrogen-powered car, has a range of about 70 miles on the load. And the reason we've done it is we want to put it into our fleet, and we'll actually drive the car. And we're not driving the car. We'll put it down in front of the museum so people can see what's going on. We have not been approved yet, but we have applied for that because we're 7 miles from also a refill station. The problem you've got with hydrogen, of course, is the hydrogen itself. It's very high pressure type fuel system, and we have a fueling system at LAX. There is a fueling station at LAX, Los Angeles International Airport. So hydrogen vehicles are gonna come on. The problem you've got there is the infrastructure to get the vehicle recharged after it's run out of its hydrogen fuel. You gotta be very careful of that, or you're stranded by the side of the road.
So the Peterson, in addition to displaying beautiful cars, I have to compliment you. It's one of my favorite places in Los Angeles.
Oh, thank you.
You're also
very much
serving an educational purpose as well with these displays and these exhibits.
Well, all museums, no matter what museum is, art museum, dinosaur museum, Southwest Indian Museum, whatever it is.
Antique car museums.
Well, yeah. The mission of any museum is to educate.
Sure.
The idea is you go into the museum, when you come out, you should have learned something. If you haven't, the museum's not doing a good job. And that's our mission at the Peterson Museum, is education. We have between 100 and 200 school children a day during the week come through the museum on field trips, and we have docents that are trained. They spend a year in their training session before they take them through, and we show them the technology. And it's not to get the students interested in automobiles, it's to get them interested in thinking about what's possible. Our first display as you walk into the museum is the Beer Blacksmith Shop, and there's Carl Beer in the back of the shop in a mannequin, working with metal in a blacksmith shop, they're reshoeing horses and building wagons and things like that. And in the front of the display is the Breer steam-powered car from 1900. One of the first cars built in Los Angeles was a steam-powered car called the Breer car. Carl Breer was a blacksmith. No real formal education, but very ingenious and had a lot of ingenuity, and he built this car that runs and drives. And what happened with Carl Breer is by 1924, He became the first chief engineer of Chrysler Motor Company with no formal education, but with the technology and the things in his head and his thought process, he was able to build this car and then become the chief engineer at Chrysler. And that's the story. So you go through the museum, and that's the story we tell the kids. The fact that all beside the blacksmith shop, we have a trough where the horses can rework, and we have a pump that actually works, and we pump the pump. Now, these are all inner-city kids, usually, that come to the Peterson. They're from the Los Angeles area. And we say, now, where did you get your water? Well, I turn the faucet on and the water comes out. Well, no, not exactly. It comes from in the ground and you have to pump it up to the surface, then pump it to your house. Kids sit there and go, oh my God, I didn't know that.
Right.
So those are the examples of the kind of stuff we do at the Peterson Museum. But you know, giving the museum, you know, the in the title museum, people think it's a bunch of old dusty artifacts lined up against the wall and come in and look at cars. It's not that way at all. We try to be educational. We try to be entertaining. We try to be cutting edge as museums go.
100 years from now, will the Peterson be here? And if so, what'll it look like?
There's no doubt in my mind the Peterson will be here 100 years from now. We are a self-sustaining museum, and we pay all our bills, and we have no debt, so we're doing okay. Thanks to the good graces of Mr. and Mrs. Peterson, who provided us with a facility. They don't own the museum, but they're our major benefactor, and it's been a fabulous. The genius of Robert E. Peterson is just unbelievable. And the museum is a lot of fun. Yeah, we'll be, and what will we be doing? I don't know. Hopefully we'll get into these backpacks you can put on and just levitate and go across town and go down. I can tell you that the other night I had to go out to Riverside. It was a time-sensitive deal. My granddaughter had a Christmas program going out of school. I left the museum at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I got to Riverside at 3:30, at 6:30 at night. 3 in the afternoon, 6:30 at night to go 70 miles, which means I averaged about 20 miles an hour. To get to her school on time, 6:30, I walked in the door, and I was there for the program. I could have gone to Las Vegas just as fast from the Peterson Museum as I went to Riverside, 70 miles away. There's something wrong with that picture, and we're supposed to be making progress. That's not progress.
A pleasure having you on the podcast, sir.
Well, thank you for asking. It's a pleasure being here.
For PodTech.net, I'm Matt Kelly for The Next Gear.